Hello. In this video, I want to introduce you to modelling. Now, we're not talking about catwalks and we're not talking about airfix. We're talking about modelling behaviour. And modelling is at the core of NLP. And most of the stuff that we introduce in NLP has come from modelling other people who are excellent in their field. And some of the key people who were modelled for NLP way back in the 70s. Are their techniques and their processes and their thought processes are still core in NLP today. And it's a great technique for us to learn. And it is, as I say, at the core of NLP. Indeed, some of the people on the internet will say that NLP is only modeling and everything else isn't NLP. Now, I don't necessarily subscribe to that point of view, but I do believe that it was the thing that made NLP unique and made it different. And because it wasn't sort of focused on just one modality of operating, it was very eclectic. And it was eclectic because people who were brilliant at what they do were modeled. So their behavior, but not just their behavior, but their thought processes as well. Now, most of us learn by watching other people. Most of us learn to walk by watching other people walk. We learn that walking is a thing, for instance, by watching other people. We learn to speak by listening to other people speak and making those same kind of noises and making connections by watching other people. When we become managers, we learn to manage by modeling other people's behavior. And so there's lots and lots of ways that we develop new skills and new processes by watching other people. I think one of the amazing things that's happened recently is YouTube and Facebook and Instagram and so on and all the social media, where you see somebody doing something, whether that's a triple backflip on a motorbike for the first time, and suddenly lots of other people are doing it. I don't know about you, but when I was a kid, there were very, very few people who could do a backflip. And now it seems like pretty well everybody under the age of 30 can do it without any problem. And so some of it is around a belief that you can actually do this stuff. I mean, just go back to the 4-minute mile and Roger Bannister, that nobody could do that. It was impossible. And then within a few months of him doing it, 12 other people had done it. So there's some of it is around belief and that it's possible to do that. And we do that by watching other people do it. And then we want to copy that because it's something that we value. And we find ourselves modeling other people's behavior. A lot of my training style is modeled on a guy that trained me in team building facilitation skills many, many years ago. And at the time, I worked for Ilford, the photographic company, and I was working in training. And we had a very kind of traditional approach to training, U-shaped tables in a room, overhead projector at the time. Do you remember those? Overhead projector shows how long ago that was. We had workbooks that we worked through kind of religiously. So at 10 o'clock, we did this exercise. At 11 o'clock, we did this, and so on. And so on. And so I learned how to train by watching other trainers within the organization. And then we went on this team building facilitation course. And the guy who trained us on the course, Barry, we walked into the room and there were no tables. There were just chairs in a U shape. He had no overhead projector. He just had a flip chart. We had no workbooks. We just had little A5 notebooks with pens to write whatever we wanted to write. And we started the day with him saying, what are you thinking? What are you feeling? What's your body state? Where are you spiritually? And whatever anybody said, it was a 12-month course, whatever somebody in the group said in that first introduction, that kind of checking in as to where they are, led him into the next into a session. So it felt like it was really completely unstructured. It felt like he did whatever he wanted to do based on what the learners wanted. So it was very learner-centered in that sense. And that was just completely blew me away. It was such a totally different experience. I've still got that notebook from 1995 with all of the notes that I made. I still use a lot of the content. And also, we wore shirts and ties and suits as the trainers. Barry turned up in sweatpants and a t-shirt and flip-flops. So the whole thing was completely different, completely alien. And I remember thinking, I want to train like Barry does, because I got so much out of that course. It was a life-changing experience. Indeed, it was the course that we spent a day on NLP, which completely changed my life and led me down to where I am right now. So the point about that was, I could have walked into a room and got rid of all the tables and got rid of my suit and wore sweatpants and copied everything that Barry did. But the problem with that was, there are some things that he did that were actually important and some things that were just idiosyncratic, that didn't make any difference or didn't add any value to it. We had the great opportunity to spend time, because we were learning how to deliver the course that Barry was delivering. So we had the fantastic opportunity to get behind the behavior, to understand what was going on, what the thought processes were, whether they were conscious or unconscious, and decide whether they were actually added value or they don't. And for instance, there were things like the notebooks. The notebooks that we had were purely there because Barry's printer had broken and he couldn't print the workbooks out. And yet that really added value. I probably wouldn't have kept the workbook, but I've kept the book that I wrote. The dress, the sweatpants and stuff were idiosyncratic. They didn't add value to the course. And in fact, if we tried that with other teams, we asked teams within Ilford what they felt, you know, what they thought in terms of, you know, trainers should wear. Does it matter? And they said, absolutely, it matters. We expect trainers to be smart. So it's like, okay. So that wouldn't have added value. In fact, it probably would have taken away value. The complete learner-centered approach wasn't there at all. It wasn't. It was very, very structured. And what he did was he utilized what somebody had said, think Milton model. He utilized what somebody had said in that group to link to what he was going to talk about next. So it appeared to be totally focused on what we needed, but actually it was really structured. And he led us to that point where he could introduce the bits on leadership or whatever it was that was coming next. The flip chart was simply because he couldn't afford a PowerPoint projector, and so he drew stuff on the flip chart instead of using the overhead. But it made us think that he really knew what he was talking about. It added gravitas and it added credibility to the way that he was delivering the content. And he knew exactly what he was going to write on there, at what time, what stories he was going to tell at one. It was my first introduction to metaphor. So it was a fantastic opportunity to model somebody I thought was brilliant at what they did. And so that's the process we're talking about here. It gives you the opportunity to see somebody who you value, who you think is really, really good at what they do, feel like you want to be better at that particular aspect, and understand how they do it. So it's not just about copying behavior. That might get you somewhere, but it's more than just the behavior. If we can understand the strategies that people use, the beliefs and values, the rep systems they use to communicate it, all of the thought processes that are going on behind the behavior, then we get a much more rounded opportunity to be as good as they are. So this process is really, in one sense, really simple. You have to understand about values elicitation. You have to understand about metaprograms. You have to understand about language patterns and rep systems and all of those things that we've covered in the past. But then you have to understand how the process of modeling works. The process itself is quite simple. In fact, there are lots of different processes in terms of modeling. The one that I use, I think is it the most simple? I don't know whether it's the most simple, but it's the one that works for me. So that's the one that I'm going to share with you. And the first step of this, of course, is to identify somebody and the behavior that you want to be as good at as they are. It's really, really difficult to model this in a kind of completely distanced way or a covert way, because it's hard to understand, you know, the strategies and the meta programs that are in play and so on, beliefs and values. you can model behavior, and with your NLP experience, you can model language patterns and you can model body language and so on. But what you can't do without sitting down and talking to them is model the stuff that's going on behind the scenes. In my experience, I find that people are really willing to talk about stuff, talk about themselves and talk about what they do and how they do it. So it's worth spending some time with them. It doesn't necessarily take a long time, but it is worth putting that effort in to spend the time. So I'll take you through the process and the process that I use and the kind of simplicity of it, but also the complexity. The complexity being the amount of data that you can gather from having a conversation with somebody when you know what you're looking for. So I'll take you through the process. Okay, so this is my process. I mean, essentially it has four stages, but the reason I've got little circles here is you can go around and revisit any of those stages any number of times. The important thing, I think, is to be clear that you've got the information you need before you move on to the next stage. So stage one is really just about listening. So ask somebody to talk through what they're doing. So let's imagine that you're looking at a particular sales process that people use. Somebody who's really, really good at selling. So just take me through it. Take me through selling the last car that you sold. And just listen. Watch their body language. Pick up their rep systems from their eye accessing cues, from the language patterns that they're using. Understand the process that they're going through. So is there a structure to the process? And once you're kind of fairly clear that you've got that kind of information, that's fine. Move on to stage two, which is, okay, so take me through it again. And this time, ask questions. So the first time is just listening. The second time is more interactive. So ask questions about the process, but be very clear that what you're looking for in this stage is beliefs and values, personal criteria, meta programs, decision-making processes, towards away from, all of those kind of things. So this is getting more in terms of helping them elicit what's going on. You might in this situation use the values elicitation process to get a real hierarchy of values. So which values do you have to bring to the fore at an unconscious level, but that help you and inform the process that you're doing in that selling that car? Step three is, again, go through it again, more questions, elicit the strategy this time. So this is about understanding the step-by-step process that they go through even before they actually start that sales process. So what preparation do they do? What's their preparation strategy as well as their delivery strategy? And then more detail on anything else that you need more detail on. So whether that is beliefs, values, meta programs, strategies, you know, all of those things. So make sure that by the time you get to the end of stage three, and remember, you can go back around any of these stages. So, you know, you can ask them to tell them that process any number of times and ask different questions so that at the end of it, you're very clear, not only about the external stuff, the body language and the language that they're using, but about the stuff that's going on behind the scenes. So, you know, that their internal thought processes, as well as their external behavior, because they're the things that we don't see. And then step four, once you've got all of that, is to try it out. So think about it. Use the same process. Use the same process in terms of the preparation strategies, the strategy that they go through, the rep systems they use, the language patterns they use. What meta programs do you have to utilize? Some of these might be very familiar to you. They might feel really alien. It might be like you're trying to speak a different language. And that's okay, because trying it out in that process helps you to decide whether it feels okay, whether there are things that really work with you or things that don't work with you, that you don't want to do again. But, you know, the point about this is, can you install that process entirely, in which case the chances are you're going to get the same results as the person you just modeled? Or are there elements of it that you don't want to do? And I will talk about that in a second. So that's the process. And again, it's a kind of iterative process. So every stage you go through gets you more information and more data. You can do this in one sitting. It can take anything from 20 minutes to a couple of days, depending on what it is that you're trying to model here. But it's worth taking the time over those first three stages. So once you've got that, once you've tried it out, that's the time you need to reflect on it and think, is this for me or isn't it? Are there some elements of it that work and some that don't? So to give you an example, when I first set up this business, and when me and Fiona set this business up many years ago, one of the things that I was really keen on was, because I didn't know what I was doing at the time, was understanding how other organizations went about it. And I worked, as lots of people do who start training companies, I worked as an associate for a number of businesses, two in particular. And one of them was kind of quite a money focused, quite a structured organization. So they had lots of processes, they had lots of procedures. Although they were a small business, they were very kind of process driven. And they had lots of ways of operating and filing things and putting things into practice. The other organization was much more people focused. And so looking at the two of those, I didn't want to be all the first business. I didn't want to be completely driven by process, because I'm not. I'm not a completer finisher. That sort of detail isn't in my kind of natural way of behaving. But I recognized that as a business, it was really useful to be able to operate in that way. The other organization felt more like it was aligned with my values, but their structure and their processes weren't as effective as the first organization. So what I did was take elements of the two. So I took the elements that I could buy into from business one, and I took into the elements from business two that fitted really strongly with my values, and created a business that's been running for, since 1996. So for quite a long time. And I've changed things along the way. Similarly, with my training style that I modeled on Barry, there are elements of the way Barry operated that I didn't fit with my kind of set of values. One of my important values is around customer service and making sure that people get perceived value from what I'm delivering. So, you know, most of the organizations I work with now, I will create notes because I think that having something to take away works really well. I'll also give people often notebooks and give them the opportunity to write their own notes and so on. So there's an element of both of those. But for me, it was trying things out. You know, I don't wear a t-shirt and flip-flops and sweatpants when I'm training, because it doesn't kind of fit with my values around the way that I deliver work. So the point about modeling is you can be that behaving exactly the same way as that other person. You can use their same strategies there and same thought processes, their same meta programs, same values and so on. But if it doesn't work for you in terms of your values, your beliefs, the way that you want to operate, are there bits of it that you can use? Like I'll still use a flip chart, like I'll still use no tables, that add value, that fit with your core values as well. And are the things of it that you need to ditch. So it's not necessarily that you're going to take everything on board. Sometimes you will, sometimes you won't. So that's modeling. As I say, it's at the core of NLP. It's a fantastic way of pulling together all of the stuff and the tools and the techniques that you've learned so far on your NLP journey, and will help you to become much better at certain areas that you want to get better at, simply by finding somebody who's really good at it and becoming more like them in terms of the way you do it. So good luck with it.